We're still doing a good job of giving you most of the class period to teach.
Yes, absolutely. I'm happy that you're here tonight. Thank you for coming. Wanted to share with you, I asked Jeff to get Mr. Microphone out. And y'all remember Mr. Microphone?
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, good looking. Never mind. So, anyway, the commercial. But Jim Jacobs, I was talking to him. But anyway, I've got a cough. I've had this cough since November officially. And I woke up this morning with pain in my side. And then I had a spell where I was coughing, and it felt like someone was running a dagger right through my side. So if I have a coughing spell, I'm trying not to, guys. I'm taking cough drops. Jeff put some cough drops up here. I don't have a cold. I think Dr. Vaughn Allen diagnosed it while we were sitting over there. So, but anyway, I'm really struggling. And if I have a coughing spell, it's not going to look pretty. So do like what you always do most of the time when I'm preaching. Just put your hands in your ears, your fingers in your ears, and look the other way. And, you know, watch the ball game if you want to. So, guys, I'm happy that you're here. Let's get started because we've got a great deal that we need to cover tonight. We're talking about the eternal plan. This diagram pretty well sums it up with regards to what we're looking at, and we are discussing from creation to the cross. 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 20, we know that God had a plan before the foundation of the world to redeem man, to save man from his sins. In this diagram, as we're looking at this, we see that sin entered into the world. We know sin entered into the world, but God still had a plan to rescue man, in spite of the fact that man blew it. It would take some people with great faith to do as God strictly commanded. And we see various characters, such as Noah, various Bible periods, where God was revealing his plan from creation. From creation. We looked at the patriarchal period. When we were looking at Moses, God had given his people law. And the reason was because they were lawless. God had given them leaders all the way from the time of Joshua to the book of Judges. And then we made our way and we started looking at the United Kingdom, the divided kingdom, and last week, where we had left off with regards to the divided kingdom, by the time we arrived there, sad situation. We see 10 tribes making their way north because Rehoboam, son of Solomon, decided to double down on the misery and the pain of God's people with regards to taxation and labor, and he doubled down on it. And they said, that's fine, and they took Jeroboam. Jeroboam took them, and 10 tribes went north. 19 dynasties in the northern kingdom. 19 dynasties. Not a one of them was good. All of them was bad. They were bad. Every single one of them. When we look at their downfall in 722 B.C., Assyria comes in and levels Samaria. takes many of the citizens in the Northern Kingdom to other places. They import pagans. There was a remnant of Jews that were left over in the Northern Kingdom. The pagans married the Jews, and then we've got what?
Samaritans.
We've got Samaritans, don't we? And that was the grind you see in Jesus' day with the true Jews versus the Samaritans. They consider them spiritually illegitimate. So we've got the Southern Kingdom, we've got some good kings, we've got some bad kings, but there's 14 dynasties. I want us to pick up tonight and look in 2 Kings in chapter 21. 2 Kings chapter 21, let's go verses 1 through 15. In 2 Kings chapter 21, who's got it? Verses 1 through 15. Who's got it? 2 Kings 21, 1 through 15. Who wants to read that for me tonight? Wow. Go ahead, Amanda. Thank you.
Manasseh was 12 years old when he began to reign, and reigned 55 years in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was
Hephzibah.
That was good.
And he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord, after the abominations of the heathen, whom the Lord cast out before the children of Israel. For he built up again the high places with his sign.
Hezekiah.
Thank you. Hezekiah, his father, had destroyed and reared up altars for Baal, and made a grove, as did Ahab, king of Israel, and worshipped all the hosts of heaven and served them. And he built altars in the house of the Lord, which the Lord said, in Jerusalem will I put my name. And he built altars for all the hosts of heaven in the two courts of the house of the Lord. And he made his son pass through the fire and observe times, and used enchantments, and dealt with familiar spirits and wizards. He wrought with wickedness in the sight of the Lord to provoke him to anger. And he set a graven image on the grove of the grove that he had made in the house, of which the Lord said to David and to Solomon his son, in this house and in Jerusalem, which I have chosen out of all the tribes of Israel, will I put my name forever. Neither will I make the seed of Israel move any more out of the land which I gave their fathers, only if they will observe to do according to all that I have commanded them, and according to all the law of my fathers. But they hearken not, and Manasseh seduced them to do more evil than the nations whom the Lord destroyed before the children of Israel. And the Lord spake by his servants and prophets, saying, because of Manasseh, king of Judah, hath done this abomination, and hath done wickedly above all the Amorites, did which were before him, and hath made Judah also to sin his idols. Therefore saith the Lord God of Israel, behold, I am bringing such evil upon Jerusalem and Judah, that whosoever heareth of it, both his ears shall tingle. And I will stretch over Jerusalem the line of Samaria, and the plummet of the house of Ahab, and I will wipe Jerusalem as a man wipes the dish, wiping it and turning it upside down. And I will forsake the remnant of mine inheritance, and deliver them into the hand of their enemies, and they shall become prey and a spoil to all their enemies. Because they have done that which was evil in my sight, and have provoked me to anger, and their fathers came forth out of Egypt, even as Jesus said.
Thank you, Amanda. I know that's challenging, and you did it well. I appreciate that. Listen, this is a bad group of passages right here, verses right here. Manasseh, the son of Hezekiah. Hezekiah was a good king, right?
Yeah.
Hezekiah was a good king, but his son sure wasn't walking in the sandals of his dad. Awesome. He wasn't. Awesome. He was horrible, horrible. He reinstated idolatry. He provoked God so much to the point where he was putting idols in the temple, okay? I mean, you talk about, you know, provoking God to wrath. He was doing it, making his sons pass through the fire. Molech was the god of the Ammonites. And, you know, you would see Ammonite kings from time to time in battle, you know, in an attempt to call on their god, Molech, for victory, they would sacrifice their own sons in fire. I mean, literally. Now, when we think about a sacrifice, you remember Abraham, right? Abraham was going to sacrifice his son, but God wasn't going to allow that to happen. But this is what we see, a literal sacrifice, okay? And this is what is going on in Judah, in the southern kingdom. It was awful, absolutely horrible. So we know God is patient, but even God's patience can be exhausted. And we see that with Judah. The spiritual condition in the south was absolutely horrible. 2 Chronicles chapter 36. Someone read verses 15. No. 2 Chronicles chapter 36. Yeah, verses 15 and 16. 2 Chronicles 36, verses 15 and 16. Who wants to read that? Go ahead, Mike.
And the Lord God of their fathers sent warnings to them by his messenger, rising up early and sending them, because he had compassion on his people and on his dwelling place. But they mocked the messengers of God, despised his words, and scoffed at his prophets, until the wrath of the Lord arose against his people, till there was no remedy.
Did God try to set him straight? How did God try to set him straight? Through his
prophets,
his messengers, right? And not only were they not listening, what were they doing? They were mocking them. They were mocking them. They were making fun of them. Okay? So I'm just trying to give you an image of the temperature, the spiritual temperature in the southern kingdom at this time. Guys, it was a horrible time spiritually. And that's why when we look at the prophets on our sheet here, we see their critical role in trying to turn God's people back. So what we're going to be looking at tonight is the Babylonian captivity. Okay? Hopefully we'll even get through the next lesson here. But when we're looking at the Babylonian captivity, primary sources are the books of Ezekiel and Daniel. These are post-exile prophets. Okay? Daniel, he would be taken into captivity around 605 B.C. Daniel chapter 1, verse 1 in 2 Chronicles, chapter 36, and verses 5 through 8. Ezekiel was taken into captivity around 597, and we see this in 2 Chronicles in chapter 36, and verses 9 through 10. And we would also see Jerusalem fall in 586 B.C. Now, as we get into this, I want us to consider these prophets for just a moment. Ezekiel, for example. When we think about Ezekiel going into captivity, he would wind up and end up at a place called Tel Abib, just right outside of Babylon, southwest of Babylon. He would marry. He would have his own home, have his own little wife and life. But he was commissioned by God to be a prophet to the captives who were in Babylon. And God would remind him of this in Ezekiel chapter 2 and verses 1 through 8. They're not going to listen to you. I mean, how discouraging, you know? I still want you to speak, but guess what? They're not listening, okay? But I still want you to speak. You know, kind of like Noah, right? You know, Noah was a preacher of righteousness. Jerusalem had not fallen at this time when Ezekiel was prophesying. The captives, they did not believe that Jerusalem would fall. God is our God. Now, this you talk about using God to your own benefit. We are Jews. God is our God. God will deliver. But at the same time, we'll worship idols too. Okay? You can't have it both ways, folks. So here's Ezekiel. He's prophesying to God's people who are in captivity. There are still Jews back in Jerusalem. And they are just in denial. Jerusalem will not fall. There were false prophets, Ezekiel chapter 13 and verse 10, who were misleading the people. And they were saying, peace! God's word says when there was no peace. Actually, what is interesting, in Ezekiel chapter 13 and verse 18, there were women who were making these little charms, and they were sewing them on their robes and on their sleeves. And these little charms, and they would make these veils, or they would put veils on, and they would have people believing, you know, in this magic. Oh, we're fine. They're in denial. It was Ezekiel's job to paint the true picture of what was going to happen to Jerusalem. One of the ways he attempted to do this was by way of acting things out. You're familiar with the book of Ezekiel, and Ezekiel in chapter 4 and chapter 5. Ezekiel would make a drawing, okay, on a clay tablet. And he would provide images of Jerusalem being surrounded and destroyed. He would have to visually show them lying on his left side for so many days, and then rolling over and lying on his right side for so many days with regards to the discomfort that you're going to feel. God would give him rations to eat, almost to the point of starvation. What's the point? They're going to be starved out. Now, that man, what a hard way to teach a lesson, right? You know, you are going to actually go through all the pain and suffering, Ezekiel, to get the message across. But his job was to teach Judah that that they certainly are God's people, that Judah would fall and the temple would be destroyed. No one was going to save them. Ezekiel chapter 15, verses 1 through chapter 17 and verse 24. The Jews in Babylon, it seems to be, they were familiar. They were being kept abreast of the developments that were going back in the homeland. As a matter of fact, in Ezekiel in chapter 24 and verse 2, they were informed that Babylon had besieged Jerusalem. And the city has fallen. What a shock. They were in shock. There's no way. We're God's chosen. We're God's special people. God surely wouldn't. It fell, folks. And like all great nations that fall from within, when sin has its way and has its say, we destroy ourselves. There's a price to pay. And Judah was no different. Along about the time we are looking at the book of Ezekiel, the prophet's message changes. Ezekiel, his message changes from Judah will fall to there is hope in the future. He relates his vision to the Valley of Dry Bones in chapter 37. In chapter 38, he talks about the destruction of God's enemies. And then he goes on in chapter 40, and he speaks highly and highly figurative terms about the glorious future of God's people. So he ends it on a positive note. There's a great day coming, okay? But this is Ezekiel. Now, let's shift gears. Let's talk a little bit about Daniel. Daniel was taken to Babylon shortly before Ezekiel. He served in a very royal place. We might call it civil service. He lived to be an old man, outliving Nebuchadnezzar and five other kings, believe it or not. When Babylon would fall to the Medes and the Persians, Daniel survived the change in the government where he lived. And he would reign, during the reign of Cyrus, the king of the Persians. Now you remember in Daniel chapter 1, you begin to look there. God put it up on Cyrus's heart to do what with the Jews? To allow them to do what?
Send them home.
Go back home. All right? They go back home. Possibly, you know, Daniel, he witnessed that. Okay? We have wonderful biblical accounts of Daniel and his friends. For example, in Daniel in chapter 1, he was strong in character, would not defile himself. Chapter 3, we learn about his friends refusing to worship idols. Chapter 6, we see Daniel in the lion's then. Okay? Wonderful Bible stories, great examples of faith. It's almost impossible to think that Daniel, impossible to think of Daniel without thinking about his dreams that he would have, interpreting dreams. He interpreted the dreams of Nebuchadnezzar in chapter 2 and in chapter 4 of Daniel. Writings for Belshazzar in chapter 5. He received visions in chapter 7 through 12. He provides for us a glimpse in Daniel chapter 2 of the eternal kingdom, which is the church. The church, okay? And you remember him interpreting the vision there of Nebuchadnezzar, that great character that he had seen, that head of gold and arms and chest of silver, the belly and thighs of bronze. And, you know, he would go on, and all of these pieces and parts, you remember in Daniel's depiction and description of it, represented what? Kingdoms, right? It represented kingdoms. But in that fourth kingdom, okay, when the stone would hit that image, you know, a mountain would form, okay? And Daniel would go on and explain that God's kingdom would be established and never destroyed. Go back and read what Jesus says about his church in Matthew chapter 18, okay? When he's talking about the church, okay? The gates of Hades shall what? Prevail against the church? Never prevail against it, right? Okay, so this is Daniel. Daniel's giving us a glimpse of God's church in chapter 9, in verses 1 through 3 in Daniel. He talks about in the first year of Darius, the son of Xerxes, who was made ruler over Babylon, the Babylonian kingdom. And the first year of his reign, it says, I, Daniel, understood from the scriptures, according to the word of the Lord given to Jeremiah. Now remember, Jeremiah the prophet prophesied about 25 years before Daniel, okay? Keep that in mind as I read this to you, okay? He goes on and he talks about Daniel. He says, I, Daniel, understood from the scriptures according to the word of the Lord given to Jeremiah the prophet that the desolation of Jerusalem would last 70 years. So I turned to the Lord God and pleaded with him in prayer and petition and fasting in sackcloth and ashes. You know, we're left asking ourselves, is it possible that Daniel knew of this glorious prayer of hope of Jeremiah? Absolutely. In chapter 29 and verses 10 through 14, Jeremiah says this, this is what the Lord says. When 70 years are completed for Babylon, I will come to you and fulfill my gracious promise to bring you back to this place. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not harm you, plans to give you hope and a future. Then you will call up in me and come and pray, and I will listen to you. You will seek me, and you will find me when you seek me with all your heart. I will be found by you, declares the Lord, and bring you back from captivity. Daniel realized he was living in a special time. Hey, look, he's outlasted actually six kings. Okay, he's outlived six kings, right? And no doubt his mind had to go back to what Jeremiah was prophesying almost 30 years prior to this and say, this is what Jeremiah was talking about. This is exactly what he was talking about. The Jews are getting to go back home, okay? We're going to go back home. We're rebuilding the temple, okay? Guys, a beautiful prayer of Daniel is found in Daniel chapter 9. Someone read Daniel chapter 9, verses 17 through 19. You would be hard-pressed to find a more beautiful prayer in the Bible than this prayer right here. Daniel chapter, what did I say, 9?
9, which verses?
17 through 19, Don.
Okay, I got it.
Okay.
Now, therefore, our God, hear the prayer of your servant and his supplications, and for the Lord's sake, cause your face to shine on your sanctuary, which is desolate. O my God, incline your ear and hear, open your eyes and see our desolations in the city which is called by your name. For we do not present our supplications before you because of our righteous deeds, but because of your great mercies. O Lord, hear. O Lord, forgive. O Lord, listen and act. Do not delay for your own sake, my God, for your city and your people are called by your name.
Man, did you catch that? You ever prayed that prayer before? I mean, not verbatim, but the heart of it. God, please listen. See. Act. You know, this is Daniel.
I love the fact that he says, it's not us, it's you.
It's you, exactly. You know, it's all about you, absolutely. So Gabriel appeared to him and assured him that he had been heard and gave him the messages of hope for the future in Daniel chapter 9 and verse 20. So, as we wrap this portion up, when we talk about God's plan to redeem man in Daniel chapter 2, verses 31 through 45, we're looking at the eternal kingdom, okay? We're looking at the church, okay? Daniel chapter 9, in verses 25 and 26, we see prophecies there with regards to Jesus, okay? And his death, and his atoning death for us. Okay, so let's shift gears. Man, we got enough time to move on and talk about the restoration and the return. Any questions or comments that you've got? You know, and I realize that, guys, I'm trying to cover a lot. I mean, think about where we started and where we're at right now, okay? We've covered a lot of material, okay? I wouldn't say in great detail, but we've got the highlights, okay? Any comments, any thoughts? Okay, let's move on. Lesson 11, okay? The period of the restoration of the Jews. Until 539 BC, the Jews were in Babylonian captivity. Okay? 539 BC, Cyrus, king of Persia, conquered the Babylonians and allowed the Jews to return home. The defeat was foretold by the prophet Jeremiah in chapter 25 and verse 12. The Jews return home. So there's three returns here, okay? Zerubbabel is one. Love the names, you know? They're tongue twisters for sure. But the first return was 538-537 BC, led by Zerubbabel to rebuild the temple. Okay? Then we see the second one. The Jews who remained in Medo-Persia were subjugated to a plot having them annihilated. These events are seen in the book of Esther. So when we're thinking of Daniel, and we're thinking of Jeremiah, and we're thinking of Ezekiel, don't forget about Esther. Okay? We also are going to be looking at, obviously, the books of Ezra and Nehemiah, right? Okay. Ezra led a second group to Jerusalem at 458 BC to enforce the laws of God. There was a spiritual revival that broke out when he went back home. Okay? A spiritual revival broke out when he went back home. And then Nehemiah led a group back to the homeland in 444 BC to rebuild the walls surrounding Jerusalem. But let me get into some of the moving pieces and parts as we look at this. Okay, so until 539 BC, the Jews were in captivity to the Babylonians. Cyrus, the Persian king, he took the throne and he allowed the Jews to go back home. And it says, in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, in order to fulfill the word of the Lord spoken by Jeremiah. And that's just amazing, isn't it? That whenever these prophets would prophesy, you know, through inspiration, it always came to be. Okay? It always came to be. Never did fail. Okay? So Ezra chapter 1, verses 1 through 4. Okay? The defeat of the Babylonians was foretold by Jeremiah in chapter 25 and verse 12. About 50,000 Jews responded to the decree of Cyrus, and they went back to Jerusalem with Zerubbabel. One of the first things that they did after settling in, and they assembled in Jerusalem, was to build an altar, offer sacrifices, and celebrate the Feast of the Tabernacle. Ezra chapter 3 in verses 1 through 7. Imogene. Yes. Yes. As a matter of fact, whenever we go back, one of the first things they did after settling down, animals were, they had animals, absolutely. Yes. And it's a good question. The next significant undertaking was the rebuilding of the temple. 14 months after their return, the Jews began to work on the foundation. Okay? Bless you. And all the people gave a great shout. Listen to this. This is heartwarming. I'm going to read this slowly, and I want you to try to imagine this. In Ezekiel 3 and verses 11 through 13. So, and all the people gave a great shout of praise to the Lord, because the foundation of the house of the Lord was laid. But many of the older priests and Levites and family heads who had seen the former temple wept aloud. And when they saw the foundation of the temple being laid, while others shouted for joy, underscore this, no one could distinguish the sound of the shouts of joy from the sound of weeping, because the people made so much noise, and the sound was heard far away. You know, this is an emotional moment for God's people. It really is. You got some of the old timers, you know, that they understand the temple. There had to be, you know, thoughts: are we ever going to get to go back home? You know, will we ever? Will the glory days ever come back? Will we ever be able to worship God as God has appointed and God has directed us? Okay, and there were some that were so excited as they're laying the foundation for the temple. Man, they just couldn't contain themselves. And there were others, you know, you just have to wonder if they're reflecting. How did we ever let it get to this point? Seriously. Sometimes, you know that old expression, you don't know what you got until it's
gone.
Until it's gone. You know? Just sad. How did we ever let it get to this point? Brian did a great job in this lesson tonight. You know, I mean, here we are. We just kind of lose our way. And we find ourselves on down the road in a place, in a bad place where we shouldn't be. And it's just like, man, how in the world? It happens so fast. So, what a very sentimental passage. The natives of the land, including the Samaritans, those rascally Samaritans, they volunteered to assist in the temple reconstruction. Ezra chapter 4 and verse 3. Were they allowed to? No. No, they were not. Okay? And they went on to frustrate the work of the Jews. It is at this point, I'm going to throw some prophets' names out, Haggai and Zechariah appeared. They chided the people and motivated them to return to building the temple. Now, you'll see a very similar thing. As God's people are going back, they're going back with a purpose. Listen, God's people are going back with a purpose. What was the purpose here? To rebuild the what? Rebuild the temple. Okay? Worship as God has ordained and ordered us. Right? And all of a sudden, here comes trouble. Right? That's Satan's role, guys. There's nothing different that happens in your life on an individual basis that didn't happen to them collectively. It happens here, believe it or not, from time to time. I hate to say it, it's true. It happens here, collectively. Okay? Where Satan, you know, hey, look, you know, if I, you know, can't destroy him out there, and I'm having some success, but I'm definitely going to try to weasel my nose in there and cause disruption. What are you laughing at, Lloyd? You know, and create problems, you know? But it's true. It's true, okay? And all of a sudden, here they are. They just kind of lose their focus. And it took these prophets, Zechariah and Haggai, to say, guys, what are you doing? You know, let's not forget who we are and what we're all about. Now let's get to work. Let's get to work. Man, that sermon preaches every Sunday, Don. It never gets old. Preaches every Sunday. It does.
Well, and so they were building with a sword in one hand and their instruments to build in the other hand.
And they had a mind to work. So the word of the Lord came through the prophet Haggai. He said, it is time for you yourselves to be living in your paneled houses while the house remains in ruins. Haggai chapter 1, verses 2 through 3. In other words, here you are, you know, you're in your paneled homes and, you know, you're living life big, but you guys have forgotten about the temple. Okay, let's get to work. With that reproof, they came and they began to work on the house on the 24th day of the sixth month in the second year of the king of Darius. Haggai chapter 1, verses 14 through 15. They finished building the temple. The temple was completed in the sixth year of Darius. Then the people of Israel celebrated the dedication of the house of God with joy. Ezra chapter 6, verses 14 through 16. 58 years after the completion of the temple, and a few years after the events in the book of Ezra came to Jerusalem from Babylon. According to Ezra chapter 7, verse 1, he was a teacher well-versed in the law of Moses. That's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful thing. And this is where they had their spiritual revival. He was accompanied by priests, Levites, singers, gatekeepers, and temple servants. The king gave him a letter giving him a tremendous amount of authority in Judah. Ezra chapter 7, verses 11 through 18. Okay? And a spiritual revival broke out. Okay? It's a beautiful thing. It was a hard thing, though, because there were sins. From here to this point, from coming back, settling in, at ease in Zion, and there were some issues that needed to be addressed, that Ezra had to address. So the next prophet is Nehemiah. Still later, about 44 BC, a Jew in Medo-Persia by the name of Nehemiah, who was a cupbearer for the king, heard from a brother from Judah that the walls in Jerusalem had never been rebuilt. They got the temple rebuilt, but the walls surrounding Jerusalem, they have not been rebuilt. And it weighed heavy on his heart. He was devastated by this, and the king allowed him to go back to Jerusalem to help rebuild the walls surrounding Jerusalem. And he went back to rebuild the walls. Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 10. He ran into problems, okay? Just like the Jews did whenever they were rebuilding the temple. Chapter 3 and verses 1 through 32. The building was greeted with mockery, okay, and ridiculed. The builders were asked as to whether they were building, if they were rebelling against the king. But they kept on working, okay? Guys, here it is, time and time again. You know, don't expect, when you're living for the Lord and you're living for the Lord, man, you just feel like, you know, things are going pretty smooth. Look out, okay? Watch out. We see it time and time again, okay? And this is a perfect example of that. The wall was completed in 52 days. When all the enemies heard about this, all the surrounding nations were afraid and lost their self-confidence because they realized that this work had been done with the help of our God. In Nehemiah chapter 6, verses 1 through 16. Imogene. It was around Jerusalem, okay? The whole city. And that wasn't uncommon. I mean, that was not an uncommon thing. You know, that's how you fortify your...
Did they have a gatekeeper then?
Yes. So key passages, Malachi, chapter 4, verses 5 through 6. Sorry. One of our basketball players was introduced at a game here last couple weeks ago as... J-Rod.
It's Jared.
So anyway, Zechariah chapter 3, verse 8, and Isaiah 11, verses 1 through 5. Oops. So, oh well. Those are the key passages, guys. I don't know if they're on your thing. So, man, not only that, I made it through here without coffee. Thank the Lord. So, any comments, any questions, any thoughts that you guys... We've covered a lot. I just wanted to try to hit the main points, okay, so we could go over this and still yet see God fulfilling his promise, that he's got a plan, he's got a promise, he's working it, okay? He's working it. He's working his plan for you, okay, if you let him, right? Ultimately, the big plan is this. At the end of this life, it's what?
Eternal life.
There it is, man. That's it, okay? And just like those pesky Samaritans and those foreigners that were getting involved and trying to, you know, stop the work, have a mind to work. Keep working. Keep praising the Lord. Okay? Keep encouraging one another and moving forward, right? Questions or comments or thoughts? Don.
Well, I you know, it's difficult for us to understand all the moving pieces between Darius and Cyrus and the Assyrians and the Babylonians and all that. One of the things that it really strikes me whenever I read through here is we had 19 bad kings in the northern kingdom.
Yes.
We had all those bad kings and a couple of good kings in the southern kingdom. Yet the rebuilding of Jerusalem was directed and paid for by King Cyrus and King Darius.
Mm-hmm.
He not only issued a decree to make it happen, but he also taxed the rest of the countries that he was responsible for to give them money and the bulls and goats and so on that Imogene asked about, so that when they got back there, they could do the things they needed to do.
Yes.
It's amazing the way God worked.
And that wasn't the only time, was it?
No.
Remember when the Israelites left Egypt?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Who funded that trip?
All of
the Egyptians.
The Egyptians, that's right.
That's beautiful. That's a beautiful thing. You know, they're going to fund it, you know. They're going to pay for that wall. But anyway, okay. I'm a gene. What's that? Okay, makeshift, you know, that's a great question. Listen, Sunday morning when we're talking about hours of prayer, okay, they would still congregate. They just didn't have the temple, okay? Now, listen, you're at the mercy of the king when you're a prisoner, whether you can worship or not, okay? We saw what happened in Babylon with Daniel. His three friends didn't even get to keep their Hebrew names. Their names changed, okay, to represent gods of the Babylonians, okay? You're at their mercy, okay? But we, you know, they still would congregate. When I was talking about hours of prayer, they would still get together. I'm pretty confident if there was a law that was created that said, no more synagogues or places of worship in the United States, I get this funny feeling that there's going to be a group of us still meeting somewhere, somehow, and worshiping God. That's what they were doing. Okay. To the best of their ability. Go on.
I think the other thing to recognize as far as the sacrifices she's asking about is throughout the Old Testament, we see, for instance, Abraham. He gets to a new place. He just piles a bunch of stones up and makes an altar and offers sacrifices.
Yeah.
And so that's what they were doing in Jerusalem. They were building with stones. They just set up altars and sacrificed,
yes,
until they could get the temple,
yes,
built.
Yes, and he was answering your question with the Jews back in Jerusalem. I was trying to answer it with him in captivity. Okay, yes, Sam.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that if you go to Turkey, which used to be Asia Minor,
mm-hmm. Turkey, yes,
I've been into caves that were underground where the Jews went to worship. They built caves. One is at Gordoma. It's 7 levels underground.
Amazing.
And the 6th level down is where the chapel was. It's actually built in the shape of a cross. And the next level down is the mortuary. But the bodies would stay there, someone passed away, until nighttime when they could take it up.
That is incredible. Absolutely.
There are many, many caves in Turkey where the Christians and Jews went underground.
If the rocks could speak.
Yeah.
That's cool. Some of you have been to places like that. Maybe others have been to the Holy Land. You know, you've seen, you know, different things. I know, you know, some of your travelers. I don't see Dee in here, but I know Dee has been to places like that.
Well, Athens, you know, Archie, Reva, Dee, and I went to Rome.
Okay.
And while we were there, Archie was reading by Brother. What was the book, Dad? He was reading a book that said, that told us about the prison that Peter and Paul were kept in Rome. Mm-hmm. And we actually went down and found it.
Oh, amazing.
Based on Brother Maddox? Was it one of his writings, I think?
Okay.
Yeah, Brother Maddox. One of the Maddox had been there and found it. And he told it, he said where it was in the book. And so I'm on the internet looking at
not
the map
you.
On the map of Rome. And right. We actually found it, went down and went in there. And it was a hole. They would lower the prisoners in through a hole so that there was no way to escape.
Mm.
And down below there was an altar that that the Catholic Church had for Peter. I think, yeah.
You know, archaeologists, you know, when you start going on a dig and you start coming up with this stuff, it's like, how do people deny there's a God? How do you deny this? You know, when I was going to India, Kathy and I were going to India in 98, the lady that sat by me, as we were on our plane, to India, she was met from Macedonia, and she, you know, to the best of our ability with our, you know, our language barrier, told her I was a preacher, and she got excited because she knew, based upon where she lived in Macedonia, that there's a lot of biblical history there, you know, and she got excited. Now, she was fighting with her husband. That was really interesting. I thought, man, I'm going to have to do some counseling here, and no one can understand any better. They can't understand me, so... But anyway.
The place we were talking about was called Mamertine Prison.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right.
In Rome.
Absolutely. You know, and that's good. That's beneficial whenever, Sam, you share that with Don, Archie, you guys share that. I mean, the Bible comes to life. It does. You know, whenever I was in India, I'm telling you guys, it's sad. I mean, you walk out of a building, and man, you can't go three blocks without seeing an idol somewhere. Okay? A temple. I went into a temple over there, an idol, a temple to a god. Now, you and I know no god's anything, and I made sure there were no brethren there with a weak conscience. We're commanded to do that, right? I didn't want someone recently coming out of Hinduism and offend them. And they're, no, brother, you're okay, go ahead. But I had to take off my shoes. And there were only certain portions of the temple I was allowed to go through because there were holy places. Now, where in the world would they get that? You know, but it's interesting. But as you're going throughout India and you see all these idol temples and idol worship, man, I just couldn't help to think about what we read about Paul's journeys. You know, it's like, wow. Okay, all right, guys. The Ninos are coming up. So thank you for your time and your attention. I'm a genie, and I talk one on one. They're out of here. I've already released them. Thank you.